premise of the shir, and next week's as well, is, as I'm sure you all know, the Gemara tells us that 30 days before Yontif, you're supposed to study and learn the halachos of a Yontif in order to appreciate it. Well, we're a lot less than 30 days before Rosh Hashanah. I imagine you may have had some shurim on the Yontif, I'm not sure. But anyway, the purpose of this shir and next week's shir as well is to give you some insight in some of the halacha, some of the lumdas, some of the important sugyas that relate to the Yontif of Rosh Hashanah, and particularly the mitzvah of shofar. As I'm sure you by now all know, if you haven't looked at the calendars recently, you may not know, that this year the first day of Rosh Hashanah is Shabbos. It happens every few years. And when it's Shabbos, we don't blow the shofar. And that's really the topic for today's shir. And I want to begin with a story. And it's a true story, and it's an important halachic story, and hopefully by the end of the shir we'll have a little bit of insight into the story. There was a great Talmud Chacham who was born in Hungary named Rav Akiva Yosef Schlesinger. He made Aliyah at the end of the 19th century, and he was a real character. Let's get some seats in the front row. You know, it's interesting, it doesn't matter how old the Talmidim are or what country they're in, the front row is always the last to get filled. So Rav Schlesinger made Aliyah, moved to Eretz Yisrael, was in Yerushalayim, and he waged many battles, if you will, about things that he didn't like, that he was looking to reform. I stress reform with a lowercase r, because he was a Talmid of the Talmidim of the Chassam Sofer. In other words, the Chassam Sofer's son, the Ksav Sofer, his Talmud Mufak, the Maram Shik, those were his Rebbeim. It's actually when he was in Europe, he was a huge fighter of reform with the uppercase r, as the Talmidim of the Chassam Sofer are famous to have been. But when he got to Eretz Yisrael, there were also the things he didn't like. So he became a reformer with a lowercase r. One of the things, a battle, really a lifelong battle, or a life effort battle that he waged for about 20 years at least, from the early 1880s to the early 1900s, was that he believed that you should blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. And there was a Torah journal in Hungary called Tel Talpiot, which he wrote many articles in trying to defend his assumption that you should blow on Shabbos, and many Talmid Chachamim back and forth mainly disagreeing with him. He did get some support. He alleges that he had some support from Rav Shmuel Salant, who was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. There's also a quote which we have in his name from the Aderet, who was Rav Kook's father-in-law, and was supposed to take over from Shmuel Salant. He came to Eretz Yisrael from Panovich, where he'd been the chief rabbi. He was going to be Rav Rashi of Yerushalayim, because Rav Salant was very old. But Rav Salant had tremendous arichas yamim, and he outlived the Aderet. So he was one of the Chachmei Yerushalayim, even though he never became chief rabbi. And he claims, this Rav Schlesinger, that the Aderet also had inclined that he perhaps would want to participate in Rav Schlesinger's attempt to blow shofar on Shabbos. Now, as I said, he tried this for many years, but it really reached its boiling point in the, it was around 1904, 1905, or back-to-back years. I'm not a calendar guru, so I don't know how common this is, but I think it's pretty rare. In back-to-back years, you had a Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos. So the prospect of 2 years in a row missing out on shofar was, you know, too much. And therefore, he really began in earnest to try to blow shofar, but as some things never change, there was tremendous kanoim, and people were against him, and there were all sorts of threats, and haramim, and in the end, officially, the big tekes that he wanted to do didn't take place. And what did he want to do? At the Churva Shul in Yerushalayim, or some other very prominent shul, he wanted to gather at least 23, and ideally as much as he could, biggest Talmid Chachamim of the generation who were in Eretz Yisrael, and in their presence, and then, of course, he wanted as many people as possible to come, he wanted to blow shofar. So it happened, because of all the pressure, the big group of rabbis never came. But rumor has it, and this is a rumor that we have is from a reliable source, as Rechil Michal Tukachinsky, rumor has it that in a private minyan, he did blow. But, as I said, it never gained traction, and what could you do? Now, why do I tell you this, aside from the fact that it's a neat story? Because among the 20 or so arguments that he tried to marshal in defense of his position, one or two of which we may see towards the end of this year, but one of the things he said seems so innocuous, seems almost obvious, so obvious that perhaps it's not true. Said Rav Schlesinger, listen, I'm the one taking the risk. The risk is all mine. I'm the one who's blowing the shofar. If I'm wrong in my arguments, so maybe I'll be doing an avera. What avera, we'll have to see as we begin the sources in a minute. But you, all the people who I'm inviting, Yerushalayim Jews, come hear me blow. What do you have to lose? If I shouldn't blow, so no, you just heard a sound, but you didn't do anything wrong. And if I'm right, so you hear something. And even if you think I'm wrong, so I shouldn't blow, but at least you're going to hear something. Why not come? It's a very, at least surface, very compelling argument. Whether he should blow or not, it's very debatable. But at least some, you know, and that's some of the quotes we have from the Adaret and Rav Shmuel Salant. Listen, I would never blow. I would never tell someone to blow. But if he's blowing, then might as well go here. Question is, and this is the way I want to frame the shir, is that really true? Is there something to be gained by going to hear this Rav Schlesinger or anybody else who may happen to be, fast forward a little over a week from now, blowing shofar on Shabbos? If there would be such a person, would it be kedai for you or me to go and listen? So let's put that question off to the side, and let's see the sources, let's see how the sugya develops. So the beginning of this sugya is a well-known mishnah, so the beginning of the fourth parak of Maseches Rosh Hashanah, and the mishnah tells us as follows. Yom Tov, Shal Rosh Hashanah, Shechalios, B'Shabbos, B'Mikdash HaYutokin, Avolom Medina. Number one, says the mishnah, we had a chiluk. In the Mikdash, we would blow even on Shabbos. The Gulin, anywhere outside the Mikdash, we didn't blow. Now, what is Mikdash? And some of you are learning. In general, when you see the term Mikdash, what do you typically assume that means? The base of Mikdash. That's certainly the Pashup Shat. That's what Rashi says. What else might it mean? Right? The Rambam has a position. In particular, the Rambam says here that Mikdash means Yerushalayim. That's relevant for Rav Schlesinger. Since whatever else was going on in the early 1900s, unfortunately, there was no Beis HaMikdash. But he said, I don't need a Beis HaMikdash. Because the Rambam says, Mikdash means Yerushalayim. I'm going to blow on Yerushalayim. That's the first din of the Mishnah. The Mishnah continues, B'shachar HaBeis HaMikdash, Hikyav Yochan Ben Zakkai, Kutokin B'chol Mokom Shiesh Bo Bezdin. Even if you don't have a Beis HaMikdash, any Bezdin, you can blow. Now, what Bezdin counts as any Bezdin? This is a humongous machlokas. It starts off in the Tanaim. I'm not going to read the end of the Mishnah. It's not important for us. But it became into the Rishonim as well. At least three or four machshitas in Rishonim. What does Bezdin mean? We saw one machlokas. What does Mikdash mean? That's easy. Only two shitas. Four-way machlokas. What does Bezdin mean? Among the shitas that are worth noting for our story with Rav Schlesinger is that the Rif held that all you needed was a Bezdin. And when we, anyone learned Sanhedrin recently, when we just refer to the term of Bezdin without any specific description, a minimum Bezdin is just three Rabbanim. And the truth is, even Mikra Adin, there's different types of Rabbanim, as you know. Like the Rabbanim, everyone here, I say with great hesitancy, even Rav Lichtenstein is not really a Rav. The smicha that anybody has nowadays is really just a facsimile of the original, real smicha. But the smicha broke down, so we, more said based on Shlichusayu, that in Babel already when it broke down, you needed to be a musmach from someone, from Moshe Rabbeinu to Yeshua. The only person who could have smicha, someone who got it, mamish from someone who got it, all the way back to Moshe. When that chain broke, obviously Chazal understood that Klai Yisrael still needed leadership, therefore they made the modern day, going back a long time, but the modern day rabbinate. But the question is, even if, depending on how many judges you need in this Bezdin in the Mishnah, do they need to be smuchin? Do they need to have bona fide smicha? Or even this other kind of smicha that I and every other rabbi who's been living for many, many hundreds of years have? So some poskim felt three may be enough, but they have to be smuchin. Who said it can be the Sanhedrin or 23, but you need smuchin. The Rif is the biggest makel. The Rif says you not only, all you need is three, the Rif said they can be hidyotos. Any kind of Rabbanim, they should be Tamir Chachamim. He says they should be major Tamir Chachamim. Mufla Bador, the biggest rabbis of the generation. But they don't have to have that original smicha. And all you need is three. Again, Rav Schlesinger was very excited. The Rif was a major source for Schlesinger wanting to blow shofar in 1904, 1905. Why? Because there were no smuchim. But he was trying to gather the biggest Rabbanim in town. So I'm in the Mikdash for Yerushalayim, that's according to the Rambam. And I have at least three Rabbanim. And he said, let's get 23 to be Machmir for other Shitas even. So I got the Rif at least on my side as well. Now all that comes out of just the basic reading of the Mishnah. Now the first question whenever we have a din like this. We want to understand, why are we not blowing on Shabbos? Is that a din to Araisa? Or a din to Rabban? What do you think? I heard murmuring. I didn't hear the Rabban. Somebody, anyone want to say Daraisa? Well, does the Mishnah give us any indication? Why are you so sure that it's the Rabban? Because you can do it in the Mikdash, except for what? Very good, okay. You're a Mechavan to Rashi, that's good.
It says Lohifkin, right?
Now, look at the first line. Yom Tov Shav Rosh Hashanah Shechalios B'Shabbos B'Mikdash Hayitoken Avalo B'Medina. It doesn't say anything about Takana there.
Oh, yeah.
It's after the Churba, and then there's Kulia Takana. Right. Right, but the first Halacha, the fact that we don't blow outside of the Mikdash, whatever that means, is that the Raisa or the Rabbana? So, the truth of the matter is, it seems to be a machlokes between the Talmud Babli and the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Talmud Yerushalmi in the second Torah on your sheet, also, of course, you know, the Yerushalmi has the same Mishnah. The Gemara is what's different. So commenting on our Mishnah, the Talmud Yerushalmi tells the story of a number of Chachamim in the beginning, of Yochanan, Rishon ben Lakish, Havi Asivin. They were talking and learning, Makje, they were questioning different things. Amrin, they said, and they quoted our Mishnah. Tanina, it says in the Mishnah, Yom Tov Shav Rosh Hashanah Shchalios B'Shabbos B'Mikdash Hayutoken Avlo B'Medina. Okay, what's the problem? So they want to know, in, which in this case means him, if, Dovar Torahu, Ach B'Gvulim Yitcheh, if Shofar is so powerful that it can even push off Shabbos, which is why we blow in the Mikdash, so then we should even blow outside the Mikdash. And the opposite should be also true. Unless, Hu Dovar Torah, if power of shofar, it's not a mita araisa koach that allows it to be blown on Shabbos. Apa mikdash lo yircha. What do we call this in the Beis Medrash? A classic memanav shach. It's a catch 22. What is the basis for not blowing? If it's a real powerful basis, then let us not even blow in the mikdash. And if it's something weaker, then we should blow even in the gulin. What's going on here? The Mishnah doesn't make any sense. That's the question. So they tell themselves what we should always tell them, always tell ourselves when we have a question. Amrin, Haigavar Rabba Dinishale. They saw Rav Kahana going, you know what? Let's ask a smart man. When you have a good question, if you don't know the answer, find somebody smart and ask him. So they saw Rav Kahana. They said, he's a Gavar Rabba, let's ask him. And Rav Kahana answered with the following drasha. This is where I have it underlined. Kos of Echad, one pasuk about Rosh Hashanah, and about Shofar tells us, Yom Trua. Just to step back for 1 second, one of the many things that's unique about shofar, and perhaps, I haven't decided yet, this may be next week's topic, one of the things about shofar is, unlike other mitzvos, there's no pasuk in the Torah that tells us you have to blow shofar. There's no tzivun. It mentions about Rosh Hashanah that it is a yom trua, a day of trua, which Chazal understand means the shofar. Okay, but then, says Rav Kahana, there's another pasuk that says it's a day of zichron trua, remembering the trua. Now, when do I have to remember something? When I'm not doing it. And if I was doing it, I don't need to remember it. So he says, we seem to have a stira. One pasuk says that Rosh Hashanah is a day of blowing the shofar. One pasuk says that Rosh Hashanah is a day of just remembering blowing. Well, which one is it? Do we blow? Or don't we? Are we doing it? Or are we merely remembering it? So Rav Kahana answers with the following drasha haketzad: b'shah shuuchal b'chol yom trua, b'shah shahayev b'shabbos zichron trua maskirin alova token. How do you resolve the stira? So there's different ways we can resolve stiras when we're learning, whether it's in Gemara or Rishonim, etc. One of the ways is to say they're both right. They're referring to different situations. Yom trua refers to if Rosh Hashanah falls 6 days of the week, you blow. Zichron Trua is also correct if it falls on Shabbos. Then we're only Zichron. We only remember the shofar, the Zikaron, but we don't actually blow the shofar. So it seems from the Gemara Yerushalmi, it's a din de Oraisa, based on this drush of Zichron Trua, that Shabbos is a day not of blowing, but a day of Zichron Trua. Now, what is the next question according to Yerushalmi? If Zichron Trua tells us that Shabbos is not a day of blowing, only a day of remembering, so what's the obvious question? Why did they blow in the Mikdash? Are you going to ask? Excellent. So the Gemara asks that question, and the Gemara says there's another drasha. If you look at the last line, the Gemara says, the pasuk continues after the Yom Shrua, which is the beginning of the Perek, in Vayikra, Chav Gimel. The next pasuk talks about various karbanos, he craved them. And the Gemara Darshans, I'm giving you this with the explanation of the Mefarshi Yerushalmi, that when is, if you have a place that's Pikravtem, i.e. in the Mikdash, where you bring karbanos, that's always a day of Yom Shrua, even when it's on Shabbos. So that's an important question, but the Yerushalmi, in a kind of a deep agav way at the end of the Gemara, deals with that. So we're not in Mikdash, certainly we're not in Yerushalmi, we still don't have the actual Mikdash, but fundamentally, for most of us in the world, according to Yerushalmi, if you want to know why you're not blowing on Shabbos, the answer is, it seems to be a din d'oraisa, because Shabbos is Zichron Shrua. Zichron Shrua, we only remember the shofar, we don't blow it. Okay, question, yeah.
Just thought from Lashon Mishnah, wouldn't it imply that it's a din d'oraisa just because they had to make a positive takana in order that they would blow the shofar outside of the Mikdash? I mean, like, so if it's in their bottom already, and all they have to do is feel it, or...
That's an interesting question about repealing the Rabbanans, because we don't always have that power. There are many the Rabbanans that we have to this very day, which the reason, which the Gemara or other sources may have told us, doesn't seem to be so relevant, and yet we keep them. There are rules. Their legal system has the rules. When can you repeal? It's what's known as Dabar Sheva Minyan. And one of the main things that prevents us from repealing things, even when it makes sense to repeal them, is because Halacha says that you need to have a bezdin which is of at least of similar, if not superior, stature. But certain things, if they were made by Anshei Kesedola and the like, we simply don't have the power without having our own Sanhedrin to repeal. So that's an answer that's brought to a question which I don't want to get into because it'll take us too far. But a question about our sugya, which would take us too far afield, though. But it may, I think, answer your question as well. In other words, whether we can repeal or not is an interesting question, but it might not be related. That's
but
what I'm saying.
Just throwing out repealing, just the fact that it says, I mean, normally when they're talking about the main takana is from the original.
No, but the takana, again, be careful. This is a question. I think maybe making a slight mistake was made before. The lashon of takana in the Mishnah is only talking about bezdin. It's not talking about the original halacha.
Yes, so they made a takana about the original halacha.
I just have to say, but it could be, as we'll see in the Bavli, it could be that whether you blow or not, chlal, you may be, well, you know, hold off your question for a second. Let's see how the Bavli deals with it. If you're still not sure, you'll ask me then, okay? Yes?
You made such a right to then how do you have the power to enact that they should blow it? It's like all sorts of stuff.
What did he get? Look, what was his takana?
She's looking for someone to prevent.
So, again, that's after the Churban Abayis. In other words, you have the Churban, the Beis HaMikdash, or Mikdash, let's be more precise. The Mikdash is always an exception. That's the first line of the Mishnah. Right. So the question is, after there's no more Beis HaMikdash, why did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai then say to do it Bezdin? That's your question? That's an interesting question. It wasn't one that I wanted to get into. Most poskim understand that in light of the Bavli, which we're going to get to. The Rishalmi didn't really discuss Bezdin. Some say, though, the Piskei Rid, for example, says it's Zecher L'Churban. We do lots of things, something that's similar, right? We don't take Lulav if it comes on Shabbos. But the Gemara tells us that Midaraisa, you didn't even, in general, forget Shabbos. Midaraisa, the mitzvah of Lulav, is only the first day. They would take Lulav all 7 days, only in the Beis HaMikdash. But after the Churban Abayis, same, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Hitkin, Zecher L'Churban, or Zecher L'Mikdash, they took the whole 7 days. So the Piskei Rid says that's true here too. But again, other Rishonim we're going to answer in light of the Bavli, which we're going to get to right now. Okay, so that's so far the Rishonim says the Din D'Oraisa. Din D'Oraisa that you cannot blow. Fundamentally, we don't blow. Shofar was never set on Shabbos, because Shabbos is a day of Zichron Shua. Take a look at the Gemara in the Bavli. Again, it's all in the beginning of the fourth parak of Masechta Rosh Hashanah, Daf Chav Tes on the base. The Gemara asks the same question, why don't we blow on Shabbos? And the Gemara, I didn't put the whole source on the sheet for you, but the Gemara asks and suggests the same Svara of the Yerushalmi, the same Drasha Rav Kahana, Yom Trua, Zichron Trua. The Gemara in the Bavli asks two questions against that, and therefore rejects the Drasha. What those questions are, why it rejects it, for the sake of time, I'm not going to go into that. But if you want, take a look in the Gemara. Bavli rejects the drasha of the Yerushalmi. And therefore, in its stead, the Bavli offers a second and a new answer, and it's where I have it underlined. Take a look. In this Gemara, it's Amar Rava, but there's a similar drasha, or halacha, I should say, by Megillah as well, and by Lulav. Sometimes it's Rava, sometimes it's Rava. Here the Nusach is Rava, Lixer the Rava. Either way, what does he say? Midaraisa Mishrei Shara. No, of course you could blow shofar on Shabbos. We don't hold the Zechron Trua thing. Midaraisa, you could blow. Rabbanan Hu Degazer Bei. But the Chazal say no. Kidarava, Damarava, Hakol Chayavin Betkiya Shofar. Vehina Kol Bekiyin Betkiya Shofar. Zera, Shem Yidlenab Yadav Yech, Etzel Baki Lilmod, the Avirenu Arba Amos, Bershus HaRabim. Uh-oh. Says, we're worried. And how many people here know how to blow shofar? So even if you account for five or six more guys being modest, it's still a lot less than half the room. I don't know how to blow either. So says the Gemara, we're worried. The average person doesn't know how to blow. Let's say they weren't responsible. They didn't take care of it before Yontif. It's going to be on Shabbos, and they're going to need to have the shofar blown for them. So they're either going to go to someone expert who's going to blow for them, which happens to be the Rambam's Nusach, or, as our Gemara says, they're going to go to a Baki, an expert, who's going to teach them how to blow. Either way, what's the fear? That on Shabbos, they're going to carry the shofar for Amos and Rosh HaRabim, which you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to carry in public on Shabbos. Therefore, you might forget. That's a very unlikely scenario, admittedly. And there are various poskim who discuss why is it that we have a gzera taking away one of the most precious mitzvos for such an outlandish, one could say, or certainly unlikely fear. Okay, that's a discussion. Not ours now, but it is a discussion. Our poskim will ask that question. It's a very legitimate question. But bottom line, what Rava says is, that's what we're scared of. And because of Igzera, we're scared that there might be a Chilul Shabbos. So therefore, Chazal, by the power duly invested in them, Chazal says, on Shabbos, you're not going to fulfill the mitzvah. Not this year. You have a second day, you'll do it the second day, but you're not going to blow shofar on the first day because it's Shabbos. Why not? Midaraisa, you could. Midarabanan, there's Igzera, we're worried. Who knows what could happen? And the Gemara concludes, as I alluded to before, this is the same phenomenon where else? Hainu tam is the lulav, hainu tam is the Megillah. Right? If Sukkis comes out on Shabbos, we don't bring lulav to shul. And in theory, it could come out, certainly if you live in Yerushalayim, that Megillah reading would come out on Shabbos. We don't read Megillah on Shabbos either. We bring it up back to Friday. We read then. Why again? The fear that you're going to go bring your Megillah, Dalet Amos, Bereshus HaRabim. They may have. I don't know the history to know how common it is. But in general, when you have a fear of something to do with carrying, we don't usually say, but since most people have, in other words, Erev have always been more the exception. In other words, I don't know if they were as common now. And even nowadays, in other words, we're in most Jewish communities, you might say nowadays there's Erevin, but not most of the world. So who knows where some people might be. And it does. You can't go halfway. You can't say in the community where there's an Erev. That's too tricky. That's really too tricky. I just want to mention briefly, just so you should know, I want to be in full disclosure, there are some individual shitas that do not understand these two gemaras the way I just described them. The Shiboli Haleket understands and claims that even the Bavli holds the Araisa. And he has a very forced reading of the Gemara to make it work with Yerushalmi. On the other hand, another extreme, there are some Mefarshim in the Yerushalmi. Moshe, Karmen Eda discuss. They have a very forced reading of the Yerushalmi that even the Yerushalmi holds as only the Rabbanon. And they reread it or force that reading into the Bavli. So just so you should know, there are some Shitas out there. But the simple understanding of both Gemaras is as we presented them. The Bavli holds as only the Rabbanon. The Yerushalmi holds it is the Araisa. How do we paskin? I gave you the source of the Rambam and really all the Rishonim, as far as I can tell. Other than that, Shiboli Haleket, no one disagrees. We paskin like the Bavli, as is not always, but mostly the case. And we hold that the reason you don't blow shofar on Shabbos is merely a din derabanan. Okay, that's adkan, almost as you will, just as a hagdama to the meatier part of the sugi, which I want to get to in a few moments. Now, before we get to that, just so you should know, this is a sugya, and the Gemara that we just saw, it's so fascinating and it's so rich that there's a good 7, 8, 9 questions that are asked by Rishonim and Achronim that we're not even going to get into. I just mentioned for example, one or two of them. Tosos, another Rishonim after them, ask, why did the Gemara say we're worried you're going to carry four Amos and Rishus Arabim? What's the bigger Hotsa'a fear? Rishus and Rishus. Before you get outside to carry the Aramas, you got to go from inside your house to outside. Why do we ask that? What's another example of a mitzvah d'oraisa, a very important mitzvah, which we do on a Shabbos, even though it seems to contradict Shabbos? Bris Milah, the Ran and other Rishonim ask, why don't we have a Gzera the Rav on Bris Milah? That's the question, exactly. Exactly, that's the Ran's question. So, there's the Pasuk teaches us that the Milah itself, which is a Malacha, it overrides Shabbos. But maybe we should say, don't do it, because the word you're going to carry the knife, and I'll tell you, Bris Milah, you need a bucky for it. Right? We don't want any amateurs playing around. So we should be worried. So the Ran asks the question, or how about something which is more ubiquitous, every single week? Priest of Torah. The Tosfos Yontif in Megillah asks the question, how do we have Priest of Torah? Maybe you should be worried. You get it, you know, sometimes like in a teen meeting and stuff, you don't have a Baal Kareh, something in practice. Maybe you'll go worry, you'll bring the Torah. Or let's say you find a problem in the letter. Maybe you get... There's so many questions about not only the Takana Rosh Hashanah, but once you start saying that we're going to make Takanas, we're going to be a little bit halachically neurotic and fear certain things. So, as we know from other areas of life, once you're a little bit neurotic, even if you weren't Jewish, and we are, there's no limit to how nervous you could get. So there's a lot of questions that Rishonim and Achronim ask. Some of them very, very interesting, we're not going to get into. But it's a transition to the second half of the sheet where we're really going to get to the main part of the sugya. Let's see two little questions. One by the Ritva and one quoted by the Achron. The Ritva, this is in post Beis on your source sheet, the Ritva asks the following question. Yovel, also, Rosh Hashanah is not the only time we blow shofar. On Yom Kippur, every Yovel year, the Sanhedrin will blow the shofar. Correct, the Ritva Akasha. How do we blow the shofar on Yovel? Why don't we say Zera Hashem Amavir Dalet Amos Rishus Arabim? Why do we only have a Takana on Rosh Hashanah? You're worried about being Mechalel Shabbos? Yom Kippur Shabbos Shabbos on Yom Kippur has a din of Shabbos. So why are we not worried about carrying on Yom Kippur? Could you imagine Yom Kippur when all the... we're careful, you know, we remember every bracha, we remember every Asher Yotzar, we talk during davening, we're so strict. But could you imagine someone actually, God forbid, carrying in public on Yom Kippur? And yet, if we're worried about that for Rosh Hashanah, why are we worried about that on Yom Kippur? Yes?
Was the Shofar on Yovel done in one location, or was it in each two?
I think so. Yeah, I think it was this from the Sanhedrin.
Not care so much if it's only...
Yeah, so there's a lot of answers that could be given. Very good, very good. And there are a lot of answers that are given. But I want to focus specifically on the Ritva's answer. Take a look at what the Ritva says. Where I'll just read the underlying part. That if we would have a similar Xera and say, don't blow a shofar on Yovel, maybe you'll carry it. In Kain lo hayu token bol yolam. Yom Kippur dinu k'shabbos. What's the difference between Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah? Very simple. Math. 2 days Rosh Hashanah, 1 day Yom Kippur. Even in a year like this where we don't blow shofar on Shabbos, we're at least going to blow the next day. But if you would say that you can't blow shofar on Yovel, Xero, we're going to worry you're going to carry, then you would have been totally oker the mitzvah lagamrei, because you'd never be able to blow. Says the Ritva, you're right, misvara, maybe we could have had a Xero. The rationale is transferable. But, he said, Chazal put the brakes on themselves, so to speak, because they don't want to be gozer, a mitzvah out of existence. Even if they could. And he seems to be implying that they could have. But they won't. But you want to formulate it as they can't or they won't. But my point, which I just want to bring out, is we don't make gzeiras as a ritva if we're going to be oker something lagamre. I'm going to take your question in 1 second. Let me just share with you the taz on the bottom of the sheet. This is also the same question and pretty much the same answer is given by the Magen Avraham. I just like the formulation of Taz a little bit better. But it's, you can find it in the Magen Avraham right next door as well. They both quote a question from earlier Achronim, the following question. Let me ask you this. This coming Shabbos, anyone here a shofar blower? Are you going to practice the Shabbos? Why not? Huh? Well, what's wrong with blowing shofar on Shabbos? Is it a din d'oraisa? Actually, the Gemara, which is the part we didn't read inside, says explicitly no. It's a malacha. It's a chachma v'ena malacha. So why don't we blow shofar or do other such musical instruments on Shabbos?
I think
Gzeira Shem Yitakein Klishir. We're worried that if something could go wrong with it, you might fix it. Again, a somewhat far-fetched fear, but that's the fear that Chazal had, and they made a Gzeira. So that Gzeira is already on the books. That applies 52 Shabbatos a year, not in every year. Not just the once and who knows how often chance that Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos or Shofar. So the Taz and the Magen Avraham both spoke from earlier Achronim. Why did Rabba need to come up with a whole new Gzeira? Maybe I'll carry four Amos and Rosh Hashanah Rabin. We already have a Gzeira on the books. Just say you can't blow Shofar because of Shem Yitake and Klishir. Now in light of the Ritva on Yovel, who wants to guess what the answer of the Taz and the Magen Avraham is? I'm giving you that hint. Of course, the source is in front of you. You can read it too. But even if you don't want to read it, Misvara, I'm giving you a hint. It's similar to the Ritva. Yeah.
Did Shem Yitake and Klishir also apply to Yom Tov?
Exactly. So fill it up. Come on, finish.
If it applies also to Yom Tov, so then if you apply that din ever to Shofar, then you'll never have Shofar ever.
It's all or nothing. Exactly. The Taz and the Magen Avraham both say, let's just read the Lashon of the Taz inside. Ein lehem ligzor la'akor legamrei dvar Torah. If we would use Gzera Shem Yitak and Klishir, we would legislate Shofar out of business. If we're just worried about Shabbos, so no, I won't do it on the first day. I'll do it on the second day. We'll blow on Sunday. But if it would be because of Shem Yitak and Klishir, then I couldn't blow on Shabbos and I couldn't blow on Sunday because you can't play musical instruments on Shabbos or Yom Tov. We're making a siyog to protect the Torah. We're not looking to uproot the Torah. And therefore, just like the Ritva had said about Yovel, in a very similar way, the Taz and the Magen Avraham both say, why did we need a new Gzera de Rabba? We couldn't rely on the old Gzera of Yitak and Klishir, because that is such a powerful, all-encompassing Gzera. It would not just apply in Shabbos, it would apply in Yom Tov, then you'd never be able to blow. And therefore, again, even though in theory the Gzera should apply, Chazal put brakes on themselves and said, no, this Gzera, which could apply to Yom Tov, and it could apply to Shofar, but, so to speak, Hey Mamru, we made up the Gzera, we could also put the limits on it, we can say it's not going to work on Rosh Hashanah when it comes to Shofar. Yes?
I'm going back to the Ritva saying that the Chazal didn't extend the Gzera to Yom Kippur and Yovel, because otherwise you'd never do it. Well, Rosh Hashanah is only supposed to be one day. Does that mean that if it hadn't been extended 2 days, Chazal wouldn't have...
It's a very good question. This Rav Schlesinger also pointed out the reason. This is it's a good topic. I can give you what to read on it if you want, but I can't get into it now. We'll really never get back to the shir. But Rosh Hashanah, 1 day or 2 days, and the fact that it's universal, that even in Eretz Yisrael we keep 2 days, that actually, as far as I know, goes back to the generation of the Rif, but not earlier. We're really basing ourselves on the Rif. Well, you had to keep 2 days. And in fact, going back to our friend of Schlesinger, he made that as one of his arguments and said, if we're all going to have 2 days Rosh Hashanah like the Rif, which means what? We don't take tefillin on the second day. Right? It's if you're working or you're in school, you say, ooh, I get an extra day off. But from a strictly halakhic perspective, it's a big kula. No tefillin on the second day. So that if that's the case, we should at least rely on the Rif, he said, to allow us to blow shofar on Shabbos in front of three, or else you're going to be taking half the Rif and losing two mitzvahs d'oraisa. I just mentioned that to you because it relates to your question about the 1 day versus the 2 days. It's a complicated calendaric question, which I'm not an expert on at all, and really would take us over. But I can give you some essays if you want to look into it more. But it's a very good point. Yes?
You know, to answer his question, just give me that when it says, Shilo you talking bo'le'ola means... Not for this year, but any time.
That's right, exactly. Because
it's not an issue of today versus tomorrow. It's an issue of...
That's right. That's also year, look, there would never be such a thing as shofar b'yovel, right, if we accepted, or if we didn't give... Yeah. Right, good, yes.
How does Shem Yitak and Klishir apply to shofar?
You mean how would you fix it?
Yeah.
Let's say it breaks.
So
do it together. Who says not? No, there's all the machine. I ain't a shofar blower. But I at least know the Mishnayos. The Mishnayos in Masechet Rosh Hashanah and the Gemara there speak about which types of breaks can be fixed, which ones can't be fixed, how do you have to fix it, does it change the sound, doesn't it change the sound? So I don't know the...
If it changes the sound, then it can't be fixed. It doesn't change the sound.
No, but there are ways to know. My point is, leave aside Shabbos. Listen, this is not new Shabbos. Leave aside Shabbos. Just regular, if you have a shofar, that today, all of a sudden we have, what's your name up there? Leo? Leo is a shofar blower, right? So let's say Leo's practicing today and it breaks. He's gone less than 2 weeks before he's prime time. So he could go get a new shofar, but this has been a shofar for years and it just, you know, this is a shofar, so he wants to fix it. So the Masechet Rosh Hashanah, the Mishnah, is going to talk about what types of break can be fixed. How do you have to do it so it doesn't change the sound? My point is just that the premise of those sugyas is that you can fix it. That's what I'm saying to you. But the problem would be, so 6 days a week, Leo could fix it if he did it the right way, ayin shum. But on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do it because that's itself a iser darabanan of fixing things. So we could have just said, don't ever practice your shofar on Shabbos because maybe it'll break and you'll fix it. The answer was no, because if that would be the case, then you'd never be able to blow not only on Shabbos, but not on Yom Tov either. Now, yes?
That if something that slips or something gets stuck in the shofar, you just trying to get it out to the because
well, the question is, what type of tikkun is the problem? Or just a little bit of a break, or a little bit of a something gets stopped? I think you could probably pull that out. Again, it depends. That's you're asking. I don't know if they do. You guys have a Hilchos Shabbos here? Okay. Well, if not, you should. Hilchos Shabbos is every night. Rosh Hashanah only is 2 days a year. Rosh Shabbos is a lot more. But even when people learn Hilchos Shabbos, one of the last things people learn is Makom B'Patish. But this is an issue. When you have something that is either not yet made, or was made, but now doesn't work, can you fix it? Can you fix it? This is a big topic. Are you allowed to open up yogurt? Are you allowed to open up soda cans on Shabbos? And bottles? These are big, big topics. They have actually a lot of practical ramifications. But something like just a little something getting stuck in your shofar, off the top of my head, my assumption would be that would be mutter. Now, let's transition to the main part of the shir. What we see from this ritva, I'm just using this as a transition, so I don't want to get hung up on it more than we have. We see from the ritva and the taz and the Magen Avraham is that if we would be legislating out a mitzvah out of existence, we wouldn't do it. Maybe we could, but we wouldn't. We're not going to be oker legamre. So therefore, we're not going to, for example, to use the taz, we're not going to say that it's Xer Yitak and Klishir because we'd never be able to blow shofar. But Lamaisa, that's why we didn't do that. But we did do something. There is a halacha on the books in the Mishnah, Rambam, Shacharuch, Paskin to this very day in every shul, in every community in the world. We don't, except for maybe the Rosh Schlesinger, we don't blow shofar on Shabbos. So there was Xer which they took something away. So maybe we're not going to use Xer to take it away 2 days, but at least one day on Rosh Hashanah Shabbos, we are going to take it away. My question to you is, on those days which we don't blow shofar on Shabbos, those years when we don't blow shofar on Shabbos, how do we understand that Xer? How much did Chazal take away? Were they totally oker, the mitzvah of shofar for this coming year on Shabbos? Or perhaps they do something a little less? Now what those two possibilities are, let's sharpen them, we haven't yet, let's sharpen them by seeing this as a general question. After all, this gzera of not blowing shofar on Shabbos, this is not the first time, or the only time, that you're familiar with the Rabbanon saying, don't do X, because we're worried maybe you'll do Y, right? We know that comes up in the Shabbos and in lots of areas of life. When Chazal say that something which could have been done, maybe even in this case a mitzvah should have been done, but because we're worried, therefore we're going to make a zera, don't do it, how does that work? What were they doing? How much were they imposing their will? So this is a question that's asked in general by a number of sources. If you look at the top of the next sheet, we're not going to read it inside because I don't want to spend the time, but I want you to have these, because this is important. You have Rabbanim Kamina Chachamim, you should know this. These are yedios that a Talmud Chacham and a Lamdan has to have. First of all, you have the Prima Gadim. The Prima Gadim is one of the classical commentaries on Shulchan Aruch. He wrote a commentary really on the Taz and on the Magen Avraham and the other Nosekim of the Shulchan Aruch. But before his whole magnificent magnum opus of a commentary, he wrote a massive introduction called the Psicha Kolelis. It used to be that you'd have to have 4 magnifying glasses and be, you know, under 30 to be able to read it. Baruch Hashem, in recent years, they've made new Shulchan Aruchs, which have clearer print. And there have also been a few Talmid Chachamim in the last few years who published individual volumes just of the Psicha Kolelis with big block print and footnotes. A few years ago, I don't know if anyone here is a veteran of NCSY Kolel, but I know a few years ago they were giving those Sfarim out at the end of the year. Psicha Kolelis of the Prima Gadim. Very, very important essay. Very, very important. Long, very important. A lot of great lumps there. Another very important work most connected to Masechta Yevamos, but it's a general book, is the Kovetz Aris. The Kovetz Aris was written by Rav Elchanan Wasserman, who's a great Talmud Chacham, Rosh Shiva Baranovich. He died in World War II in the Holocaust. He's a Talmud at one stage, a Talmud of Reb Chaim Brisker. So he's most famous for two volumes called Kovetz Shurim, which are more like, they're said as Ha'aris, but they're very deep and lumdish on a number of Masechtas. That's two volumes, but then there's a separate volume called Kovetz Aros, which is on a lot of topics, but it's based really on Masechta Yevamos. So both the Prima Gadim and Rav Elchanan, and there are others, basically they are choker. They ask this, investigate this question in general about the koach of Chazal when they make gezeros. How much are they really doing? And let's, for the sake of time, let's not even read the Prima Gadim, but let's just read the underlying parts of the Kovetz Aros. He says the following. Actually, I take that back. Let's read the non-underlying parts. The ichus ha'akira. To what extent? What's the content? What's this of this akira? If Chazal say, don't do something, you're oak or something. Im ayde akirosam nekar din Torah legamre. Do we say that they said the mitzvah which used to exist, and the power vested in us, we're oak it, we uprooted it, doesn't exist at all. You know why you don't blow shofar Shabbos, for example? Because there's no mitzvah. What do you mean there's no mitzvah? It says in Pasuk. No, Chazal said there's no mitzvah today. Or perhaps a little bit more moderately, no, mira raisa, there is a mitzvah to blow. Elisha Torah ninalem reshus, but savos lono shlulakayim a mitzvah. One possibility is the first one, the more ambitious one, to say they were totally ochre the mitzvah. Second possibility is to say, no, the mitzvah may still be there, but they told us not to do the mitzvah. Now, who said we should listen to them? That's where things like Los Osor come in. But they told us, and we have to listen to them. Does the mitzvah get totally uprooted? So, Mamela, we don't do it because there's no mitzvah? Or is the mitzvah still there? The Chazal just said, almost like an Isser Gavra, not to do it. Now, what would be a nafkamin, again, if we want to see this come to life? If it's not just, we're not just spinning our wheels, but let's bring this to life. So Rav Elchanan himself puts a number of things in particular. I'll mention the one that I have underlined. The Gemara says in Masechta Menachos and Daf Mem, you know that Tchelis, I'm not getting into now modern and contemporary Tchelis. And on Gosher in particular, I assume a pretty high percentage of guys seem to be wearing it, which is fine. But I'm talking now, beginning of the Gemara and earlier, when you had Tchelis, right, the Tchelis strings were wool. So the Gemara wants to know, can you wear a beged that is made out of linen? Sadin, linen wrap. What's the problem? Linen and wool would be shatnez. Now the Gemara has a drusha according to Beis Hillel that the mitzvah of tcheles overcomes and overrules. I say the halosa say the mitzvah of or the prohibition of shatnez. But at the end of the day, the Gemara paskins that mirabanan were machmir for Beis Shammai. The Chazal said, don't wear tcheles on your sits on your linen garment. So machlokas, if you should even wear the white strings, but midaraisa, you don't fulfill the mitzvah tzitzis without the tcheles, and even though in theory you should be mechuyev on the linen garment, like Beis Hillel, but chachamim are machmir like Beis Shammai not to. Why? Because the theory is, what if you're wearing ksus laila? We know that tzitzis are not a mitzvah for nighttime garments, so let's say you had pajamas with four corners, and they're linen, so then there's no mitzvah to wear tzitzis. But if you were wearing, let's say you had the tzitzis on them, but there's no mitzvah to wear it at night. So then you don't have the assay of tzitzis to override the close assay of shatnez. Of course, it's a klutz mistake, but we often make mistakes. So the worry is, maybe you'll come to shatnez without the mitzvah to protect you. Because we're worried, again, a far-fetched fear, but we're worried. Therefore, Chazal said not to do it. So Rav Elchanan quotes from one of the Rishonim, the Sefer Eshkol. But let's say I did. Let's say I put my tcheles with wool on my linen beged. Even against Chazal's wishes, do I get malchus? Why would I get malchus in theory? Because I'm violating the Yisur Doraisa of Shabbos. Why might I not get malchus? Because it's Tchelis. Tchelis is Aseh Dochelos Aseh. I, but Chachamim said not to do it. So says Rav Elchanan, you see this very question. If you say that Chazal totally uprooted the mitzvah and said there is no mitzvah of tzitzis on a linen garment, so when I put the tzitzis on, even with chelis, do I fulfill a mitzvah? No, because there is no mitzvah to fulfill. And then all I'm left with is the aver of shatnez, I would get malchus. But if you say the Chazal said, no, listen, there is a mitzvah there, we're just telling you not to do it. Then it's possible, said Rav Chaim, possible, said the Rav Chanan, excuse me, that even though I shouldn't have put the tzitzis on, but if I did it, well, it's true, I may have done an Isser Darabanan, but I'm not going to get Malchus for Shadnez, because fundamentally there is still a mitzvah, which I fulfilled, which overrides Shadnez. I'll give you a more popular one, and then we'll get back to Shofar and conclude this year. The next sources here I have is Machlokas, Tosos, and the Ran. The Gemara in Masechta Sukkah, also in Yom of the Yoma, not that far away, Sukkah, says that if you have a Sukkah, which is plenty big, but for whatever reason, even though I'm in the Sukkah, my table is outside the Sukkah. The Gemara says, Mita Araisa, it works. Mita Rabbanan, you're not supposed to eat in such a Sukkah, because we're worried, because listen, we all know, right? So unless you can pull the table in. More likely than not, we go where the table is. We go where the food is. So the fear, says the Gemara, is Shema Yimshach Achar Shulchano. If the table is outside the Sukkah, even though Midaraisa, it's okay. I'm sitting in the Sukkah, I take the food from the table, and I eat it in the Sukkah. But since I'm worried that the food's there, I might come out of the Sukkah. Chazal say, don't eat in such a circumstance. You're not supposed to. What if you did? What if you did? So the Mishnah in Sukkah tells an amazing story with the elders of Shammai and Hillel who debated this question, going to Rabbi Yochanan's house. He was eating exactly like this. And the way the Mishnah concludes is that the Shammai people told him, Lo kiyamta sukkah mimecha. This is how you always ate. You always had your big sukkah with your table outside. Lo kiyamta sukkah mimecha. You never fulfilled the mitzvah sukkah. Question is, what does that mean you never filled it? Mida Raisa, that's a perfectly kosher sukkah. So on that line, Tosfos and the Ran argue. Tosfos says, you know what it means? It means exactly what it says. You did not fulfill your mitzvah at all. You want to know why not? Because Chazal told you not to do it. Period. If he told you not to do it, you're not even fulfilling a Daraisa. But the Ran says, no, come on, don't be so extreme. Lo kiyamta sukkah mimecha means you didn't fulfill the sukkah ideally the way you're supposed to. What you're supposed to do it is with the details and the chumras of Chazal. But at least you fulfilled on a daraisa level the mitzvah sukkah, or to say it in reverse. You were not over on anything on a daraisa level because after all, you're sitting in a perfectly good sukkah. Tosfos versus the Ran. A number of the achronim, including Rabbi Chanan, say it's the same machlokes. When the Chazal said don't eat in such a sukkah when the table is outside, the question is, what did they mean? Were they totally oker the mitzvah of sukkah in such circumstances? In that case, you're not even fulfilling anything, not even on the daraisa level. That's Tosfos. Or perhaps they said, no, on the daraisa level, there's still a mitzvah. Rabbi Rabbanan, we're telling you not to do it that way. Okay, I did. So you shouldn't have done it. The Rabbanan are going to give you a patch. Well, I'm not making light of that. That's serious too. But on the daraisa level, the mitzvah is still b'mkomo omeid. It's still a mitzvah. And therefore, you fulfill the mitzvah. So now, in light of all that, let's bring it home. 10 more minutes and we're done. What about shofar? Shofar on Shabbos. Chazal said, don't do it. We're worried you're going to carry. What did Chazal have in mind? What did they accomplish? Did they say, did they intend Chazal? Do they have the power even to say there is no mitzvah or shofar on Shabbos, period? Were they ochre at Lagamre? Or perhaps they said no. Maybe they can't even say that. There's a mitzvah. The mitzvah shofar is still there, it's just that you're not supposed to do it. So let's think about some nafkamina. What would be a nafkamina, the most obvious one? What would be a nafkamina of this question? Huh? Before Rav Schlesinger, that's already fancy.
If you blow it, you don't know what you're going to do. Did you get a mitzvah?
What'd you say?
Like, post facto.
But what if it's all nice and good, but let's say, over v'taka, let's say I blew anyway. Either I didn't know, or let's say I didn't care. I didn't care. I love shofar so much. Did I fulfill a mitzvah or not? I blew even though I wasn't supposed to. No question, I wasn't supposed to. But I did blow. So what do you think? If somebody this Shabbos, Leo, if you blow on Shabbos, do you think you fulfilled the mitzvah or not? Next Shabbos, excuse me. Yeah, this Shabbos, don't do it. Yeah, what about next Shabbos? What do you think? Good. So, what do you think?
Yes, you would.
You think you would fulfill a mitzvah?
No, I know.
All right. That's good. I like a person who goes on record. Anybody else? So this is a major, major battle royal, super heavyweight machlokas achronim. Rabbi Kiva Eger, no less than Rabbi Kiva Eger, says Beferish in the first source there in Os Dalid, Godol Shetoka B'Shabbos, Kiyam Mitzvah Shofar. He did a Isra Darabonin. You're not supposed to blow Shofar on Shabbos. Okay, but we can bifurcate. He did an Isra Darabonin, but he fulfilled, says Rabbi Kiva Eger, the Mitzvah D'Araisa of Tekiya Shofar. A number of Achronim take very strenuous issue with this Rabbi Kiva Eger. A number of places, I'll just mention to you one which I put on the sheet, a fascinating sefer. What is the gematria of the word Kava? Kuf Beis Aleph? 103. Right? The Kava de Kashiyosa is a book of 103 questions. 103 brain teasers, super impossible sharp questions. It's written by somebody named Rav Yoav Weingarten, who is slightly more well known as the author of Tshuvas Chalkas Yoav, and he was one of the premier Talmidim of the Avnei Nezer. And he collected from throughout Shas, Poskim, Achronim, 103 questions which he spent who knows how much time trying to answer and he couldn't. All of them are left unanswered. Question number 99 is, Rabbi Akiva, Eger, with all due respect, what are you thinking? That's exactly what he says. It doesn't make any sense. How can Rabbi Kiva Eger say you are fulfilling a mitzvah of blowing shofar on Shabbos? If I blow on Shabbos against Chazal, I'm going to fulfill a mitzvah. So first of all, he says, as was anticipated correctly, it's certainly against Tosfos. And he also wants to suggest it's even against the Ran. Why? The Ran said on Sukkah it's okay. He says, maybe give me Mechalik. After all, when it came to Sukkah, there's still a mitzvah of Sukkah. There's 8,000 different ways you can fulfill the mitzvah of Sukkah. There's just one little one you're not supposed to do with the tables outside. So clearly they weren't uprooting the whole mitzvah. They were just saying, don't do it in this one little way. But when it comes to shofar, assuming that we're all listening to Chazal, there's not going to be any Jew anywhere in the world blowing shofar on Shabbos. Clearly that was a much more ambitious takana. And therefore he says, even if the Ran holds it on Sukkah, your Yotzei, he suggested even the Ran won't help Rabbi Kiva Eger. Because even the Ran, he says, is going to be against. Furthermore, he says, we assume, and again, I'm just going to mention this for the sake of it, but I don't have time to develop the idea. He says, we have a big debate in Poskim, Rishonim, but if you assume, like many Poskim do, that there's no Rishos Harabim D'Araisa nowadays, that every carrying is at worst of the Rabbanon, which most Poskim do assume, it's a big Machlokas Rishonim, says, if that's the case, so then how come we're not blowing? Leo should be blowing next week. The whole fear in the Mishnah was, I'm worried I'm going to carry Dal Amos Rishos Harabim, but nowadays there is no Rishos Harabim. And yet, we don't blow. So he says, the very fact that we don't blow, it must be because Chazal, at that moment in time, were Ochre and Lagamre. And therefore, even though there may not be Rosh Hashanah Rabbim now, but there's no mitzvah, if somebody's down and out, you can bring them back. But if it's totally out, what are you going to do? So whether that's a compelling proof or not, that's his final point. But bottom line is, he and many others here became eager. Come on. How could you possibly say that you fulfill the mitzvah? And obviously, as was anticipated, this machlokas about shofar seems to be, and we don't have time to suggest why it might not be, but it seems very likely to be connected to the same machlokas we saw about tzitzis, we saw about sukkah. What were Chazal doing? What are they capable of doing? Did they totally uproot the mitzvah? Or perhaps, did they leave a little bit? A second related point, post number two there. Any svarim in the room? Nusach svar? Mechaber? Good. So, if you grew up in a nusach svar, a real svar, not nusach svar, a real svar shul, on a regular year where you blew shofar twice, how many times did it say Shechayonu? Do you remember? Okay, you said it only once, I assume. The Machaber Shita is, you only say Shechayonu on the first time you blow. Our Minag Ashkenaz is to make Shechayonu both times. The question the Poskim, specifically the Sephardi Poskim, ask is, if somebody blew on Shabbos is the first day, and then they blew again on the second day, would they make a Shechayonu on the second day? Like everybody else? Or would they say, again, everybody else, but even the Sardis, that they, everyone else didn't blow on Shabbos, so the second day is the first time they're blowing. But this guy who blew on the first day, would he make a Shechayonu or not? So some of the Chorim asked this question. And the Chora, it's all connected. Because if you hold like Rabbi Kiva Eger, you shouldn't have done it, but you fulfilled the mitzvah. Fulfilled the mitzvah. And the second time you're blowing is, in fact, the second time you're blowing. So you're not going to make a shafiyanu, according to the machaber, who says you only blow, you say you only make shafiyanu the first time. But if you hold that you did nothing other than avera, you accomplished nothing on the first day, because after all, chazal were totally okay of the mitzvah, so then you would, even though it's the second time you're blowing, and even though you hold like the machaber, you would still make shafiyanu on the second day. Third and last point, and then we finish with the story of Rav Schlesinger. Third and last point is the Chachma Shlomo, of Shlomo Kluger, who has a lot of tshuvas. They're called Ha'el Chacha Shlomo, Tuv Tam V'das. He was a prolific Galatianer Talmud Chacham. He also has commentary on Shulchan Aruch called the Chachma Shlomo. So Leo, when you blow shofar, how many notes always go together? I'm really sorry for putting you on the spot. Any other shofar blowers? How many go together? I'm saying like on the line, and this center, really anyone can answer this question. A unit has to be three, right? And according to Halacha, it's not kosher unless you have the unit of three. So the Chachma Shlomo has the following suffix. Let's say you started blowing on Shabbos. You weren't supposed to, but you did. You blew one. Then you blew a second. And then someone came over to you and said, Gevalt! What are you doing? It's Shabbos! Should you finish the third or not? That's his suffix. After all, listen, I was already over the Avera. I already didn't listen to Chazal. But maybe, he says, once I'm ready, up the creek, Chazal's at least get a mitzvah for it and blow. And finish. That's his suffix. But look at the last source on your sheet. Avar o shakach, either you on purpose or by accident, you blew. Aleph obeys, but you didn't finish the third one. E neima shigigmur shlisha solo. Maybe you should finish it, at least get your mitzvah for it. Now, what his conclusion is, or what our conclusion should be, it's an interesting question, not important to me. What's important to me is, the whole suffix of Rav Shlomo Kluger is predicated on what? On what assumption? In theory, you would get a mitzvah. He still might say, don't do it, because it's wrong. But it doesn't make any sense to say what he's saying, unless what? He assumed, like who? Rabbi Akiva Eger, that you get a mitzvah. But obviously, if we would hold, like the other Akronim will say, what are you talking about? Chazal were totally ogre shofar on Shabbos. Then it wouldn't even be a suffix, what he's saying. Everyone understand that? So Rav Schlesinger, let's bring it back. So Schlesinger said, I am going to blow. And he said, I have all these arguments about what I'm doing is correct. And you should listen to me. And I wrote 20 articles over 20 years and tell Talpiot, this Hungarian Torah journal. And why won't anybody be nice to me? Why won't anybody let me blow? And they were bothering him and the Kanaim were making him crazy. And he just wanted to blow the shofar. But then he added, if you recall, and even if you don't agree with me, but come anyway, come listen. Because at least you'll fulfill a mitzvah. Whether I did the vera is a different question. But at least you'll fulfill a mitzvah. That's what he said. Ooh, now we see it's not so pashut. Not so pashut at all. The story goes, again, it's only his word, but the story we have, where Yechiel Mikol Tukhachitsky quotes this, that the Aderet, member of Cook's father-in-law, he said in that last year, before Rosh Schlesinger got completely shouted down, he anticipated before Rosh Hashanah that he wouldn't live out another year. So before Rosh Hashanah, it's a year in which Rosh Hashanah is coming out on Shabbos, and he doesn't think, he feels himself he's not going to live another year. And he said, you know what, if Schlesinger would blow, I would want to come in here, because I'm never going to get another chance to have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, 2 days of blowing. So, as far as I know, that year that we're talking about, two things happened. One, Schlesinger never got to blow because they persecuted him, and maybe in some small hidden place he did, but it wasn't public. And number two is, that Derek did die that year. He died in Adar of that year. Now, whether he actually went to here, the way he's quoted as saying he wanted to, I don't know, because it's not likely that he even knew where Schlesinger was in some secret catacomb in the middle of Yerushalayim, hidden away in some deep alley, blowing. But he said he wanted to go. That's the report that we have. But he was worried he'll never live, and in fact, he didn't, for another year. But again, so, it's poignant. There's a real human interest here. Shaila is whether it would make any sense. According to Rabbi Akiva Eger, no small person to hang your hat on, Rabbi Akiva Eger says yes, that Derek makes sense, whether you should blow or not, but there's no reason not to listen, because there is a mitzvah, even if you are over the Aveir, there's still a mitzvah to listen, because you're blowing. But according to all of these other poskim that we've seen, going back to the Tosfos about Sukkah, the Sheet about Tzitzis, and Rabbi Akiva Gadim, and all that stuff, if you held like that other tzad that said, from the Chazal, whether it's an other mitzvah or shofar, or totally oker the mitzvah of the Gamrei, So then, if Rav Schlesinger is playing a real high-stakes game, it's a real high-stakes bet. If he's right that he's allowed to blow good, then he's fulfilling a mitzvah. But if he's wrong, then not only is he doing an avera, but there's no payoff. He didn't get anything in return. Because if you violate, then there's no mitzvah. Then, not only did he get anything wrong, but then, it would be just a waste of time to come in here. Any last question? Yeah.
But since it's still a maybe, I don't see why, why people didn't go to it.
Well, people know. No, no, in economy, you did. I would agree. I've been clear. If someone were blowing and you just went to listen, fundamentally, you wouldn't be losing anything other than depending on how hot it is or, you know, how long a walk. But you're, that is correct. The reason he didn't blow is because there were so many people who thought that it was wrong to blow that they kind of intimidated him not to blow. But you're right. I'm just saying that there'd be no point. Would there be a point to come and listen other than a nice, you know, afternoon walk? So, according to Rabbi Kivyegor, the answer is yes, there would be a point. Why not? But according to the other Shita, there would not be. Anybody else? Okay, Yashakawa.